And welcome to your GCSE English Language Revision Podcast. I'm so glad you're here because today we're diving into one of the most fascinating and genuinely useful topics on the specification, Component 3, Language and Journalism. Now, I know what some of you might be thinking, journalism? Really? But trust me, this topic is about so much more than newspapers. It's about understanding how language works, how it changes over time, how it shapes identity, and how the choices writers and speakers make are never, ever accidental. In today's episode, we're going to cover the core concepts you need to know, walk through the key language frameworks, explore how English has changed from around 1550 to the present day, and then, crucially, I'm going to give you the exam tips and common mistakes that will make the difference between a grade 5 and a grade 8. We'll also do a quickfire recall quiz at the end, so stay with me right to the finish line. Let's get started. Right, let's start with the foundations, the language frameworks. These are your analytical tools. Think of them like a toolkit. Every time you look at a piece of language data, you need to reach into this toolkit and pull out the right instrument. There are six key frameworks, and I want you to memorize them. I use the mnemonic GPS LMS. No, wait, let me give you a better one. Think of the phrase, good pupils should learn more syntax. That gives you graphology, phonology, semantics, lexis, morphology, and syntax. Six frameworks. Commit them to memory. Let's go through each one quickly. Graphology is the visual appearance of language. The layout, font, use of images, columns, headlines, white space. In journalism, this is massive. A tabloid newspaper and a broadsheet look completely different, and that's a deliberate choice that communicates meaning before you've read a single word. Phonology is the sound system of language. Now, in written texts, you might think phonology doesn't apply, but it absolutely does. Think about alliteration in headlines, or the way a journalist writes dialogue using phonetic spelling to represent a regional accent. Phonology is also crucial when you're analysing spoken language data. Semantics is about meaning, the connotations of words, semantic fields, how meaning shifts over time. A word like awful originally meant inspiring awe, full of awe. Now it means terrible. That's semantic change, and it's a beautiful example of how language evolves. Lexis is your vocabulary level, the specific words chosen. Is the vocabulary formal or informal? Latinate or Anglo-Saxon? Technical or accessible? In journalism, lexical choices tell you everything about who the audience is and what the writer wants them to feel. Morphology is the structure of words, prefixes, suffixes, root words, compound words. Think about how new words are formed. Selfie, Brexit, podcast. These are morphological innovations, and they're evidence of language change in action. And finally, syntax, sentence structure. Are sentences long and complex, or short and punchy? Does the writer use passive voice to obscure agency? Does a minor sentence create dramatic impact? Syntax is one of the most powerful tools a writer has, and one of the most rewarding things to analyse. Now, let's talk about language change, one of the most intellectually rich parts of this component. English has been changing since it first arrived on these islands, and the specification asks you to trace that change from around 1550 to the present day. That's roughly 500 years of evolution, and the pace of change has been accelerating dramatically. In the early modern English period, think Shakespeare, the King James Bible, the printing press, English was becoming standardised for the first time. The printing press was transformative. Suddenly, written language could be mass-produced, and that meant spelling and grammar started to stabilise. Before the press, you might spell the same word five different ways in the same document, and nobody batted an eyelid. By the 1700s, prescriptivism was on the rise. Samuel Johnson published his famous dictionary in 1755, and suddenly there was an official version of English. People started to believe there was a right and wrong way to speak and write. This attitude that language should be fixed and protected is called prescriptivism, and it's still very much alive today. The 1800s brought the Industrial Revolution, which created a flood of new vocabulary. Words for machines, processes, factories, railways. At the same time, the British Empire was expanding, and English was borrowing words from languages all over the world. Bungalow from Bengali, safari from Swahili, pyjamas from Urdu. The 20th century brought mass media, radio, cinema, television, and with them, American English began to exert enormous influence on British speech. Words like okay, cool, and teenager crossed the Atlantic and became part of everyday British usage. And then came the internet. The digital revolution has arguably caused more rapid language change than any previous period in history. Text messaging created abbreviations, LOL, BRB, OMG. Social media created new genres of language, the tweet, the caption, the hashtag. Emoji became a genuinely multimodal form of communication, combining visual and linguistic meaning. Now, here's where journalism comes in. Journalism is one of the most powerful forces shaping language. Newspapers, websites, and broadcast media don't just report on the world, they actively shape how we talk about it. The vocabulary journalists choose, the framing they use, the headlines they write, all of this influences public discourse, and over time, the language itself. When you analyse a journalistic text, you need to think about mode. Is it written, spoken, or multimodal? You need to think about field. What subject is being discussed, and what specialist vocabulary does that bring? You need to think about function. Is the primary purpose to inform, to persuade, to entertain, or to shock? And you need to think about audience. Who is this text written for, and how do the language choices reflect that? I use the acronym MFFA, Mode, Field, Function, Audience. Every time you approach a text, ask yourself those four questions. They will unlock your analysis every single time. Let's talk about language variation and identity, because this is where the component gets really interesting and where the higher marks are waiting for you. Language doesn't just communicate information, it constructs identity. The way you speak tells people where you're from, what social group you belong to, how educated you are, or how educated you want to appear, and crucially, it tells people how you want to be perceived. Sociolects are varieties of language associated with particular social groups. Think about the language used by teenagers, or by lawyers, or by gamers. Each group has its own vocabulary, its own grammatical patterns, its own ways of signalling membership. Dialects are regional varieties of language, not just accent, but vocabulary and grammar too. In some dialects, I were going is perfectly standard. In others, it marks you as a speaker of a particular region. Dialect is a fascinating area because it intersects with questions of power and prestige. And this brings us to attitudes towards language. The exam will ask you to evaluate attitudes, not just describe them, but critically assess them. You need to be able to distinguish between prescriptive attitudes, the view that there is a correct form of English that should be preserved, and descriptive attitudes, the view that all varieties of language are equally valid and that change is natural and inevitable. Neither position is entirely right or wrong, and the best candidates will acknowledge the complexity. A prescriptivist might argue that standard English is essential for social mobility and core communication. A descriptivist would counter that dismissing regional dialects or non-standard varieties is a form of social prejudice. In journalism, these attitudes play out constantly. When a newspaper mocks a politician's regional accent, or when a columnist complains about young people ruining the language, they are expressing prescriptive attitudes. When a linguist writes that language change is natural and healthy, they are taking a descriptive stance. Your job in the exam is to analyse these attitudes critically, to explain what they reveal about the writer's values, assumptions, and relationship with their audience. Right, exam tips time. And I want you to really listen to this section, because these are the things that separate the students who get grade 7s and 8s from those who plateau at grade 5. Tip number one, use your linguistic terminology accurately. This sounds obvious, but it's the single most common reason candidates lose marks. Don't just say, the writer uses interesting words. Say, the writer employs a semantic field of violence, words like assault, attack, and bombard, which positions the reader to view the subject as an aggressor. That's the difference between a level 2 and a level 4 response. Tip number 2. always link your analysis to context. The mark scheme explicitly rewards candidates who connect language choices to mode, field, function, and audience. Don't analyse in a vacuum. Ask yourself, why has the writer made this choice, given who they're writing for and what they're trying to achieve? Tip number 3, evaluate attitudes. Don't just describe them. If a text expresses a prescriptive attitude towards language change, don't just say, the writer thinks language change is bad. Explain what that reveals about the writer's values, who they're appealing to, and what assumptions they're making about their audience. Tip number 4, synthesize across frameworks. The highest level responses don't just apply one framework. They show how graphology, lexis, and syntax work together to create meaning. A tabloid headline that uses bold font, monosyllabic words, and an exclamatory sentence is making choices across 3 frameworks simultaneously. Show that you can see the whole picture. Tip number 5. Your responses must be extended and comparative. If the question asks you to compare 2 texts, you must compare them, not write 2 separate analyses. Use comparative discourse markers. Whereas, in contrast, similarly, both writers, however, these signal to the examiner that you are genuinely comparing, not just describing. Now, the most common mistakes I see. First, vague analysis. The writer uses emotive language to make the reader feel emotional. That tells me nothing. Which words? What emotions? Why those emotions? How does it serve the writer's purpose? Second, ignoring the phonemic reference sheet. If your exam provides a phonemic transcription key, use it. Candidates who can accurately describe phonological features, vowel sounds, consonants, stress patterns, demonstrate a level of sophistication that examiners genuinely reward. Third, treating all texts as if they're the same. A broadsheet article from 1890 and a Twitter thread from 2023 are completely different in mode, register, and purpose. Your analysis needs to reflect that difference.
Okay, quiz time. I'm going to fire some questions at you. Pause the podcast after each one, think of your answer, then press play to hear mine. Ready? Question 1. What does the acronym MFFA stand for? Mode, field, function, audience. Those are the 4 contextual factors you apply to every text. Question 2. Name the 6 language frameworks. Graphology, phonology, semantics, lexis, morphology, syntax. Remember, good pupils should learn more syntax. Question 3. What is the difference between a prescriptive and a descriptive attitude to language? Prescriptivism believes there is a correct form of English that should be preserved. Descriptivism views all language varieties as equally valid and sees change as natural. Question 4. What is semantic change? Give an example. Semantic change is when the meaning of a word shifts over time. Classic examples: awful, originally meant inspiring awe. Nice, originally meant foolish or ignorant. Gay has undergone significant semantic broadening in the 20th century. Question 5. What is a sociolect? A sociolect is a variety of language associated with a particular social group. For example, teenage slang, legal jargon, or gaming vocabulary. How did you do? If you struggled with any of those, go back and reread the relevant section of your notes. Right, let's wrap up. Today we've covered the 6 language frameworks, your analytical toolkit. We've traced English language change from 1550 to the present day. We've explored language variation, identity, and attitudes. And we've gone through the key exam tips that will help you maximise your marks. The most important thing I want you to take away is this. Language is never accidental. Every choice a writer or speaker makes, every word, every sentence structure, every layout decision is meaningful. Your job in the exam is to explain those choices, connect them to context, and evaluate their effects. You've got this. Good luck in your revision, and I'll see you in the next episode.